and the radio up. I like to see the sunrise, see the love in my woman's eyes, feel the touch of my precious child, and know a mother's love.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christine O'Leary, covering KHSC's appointment of Dr. Doris Jabs to Clinical Chair of Breast Health.
Hello, I'm Christine O'Leary, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
A $1 million fundraising pledge from the annual Rose of Hope Ladies Golf Tournament has made it possible to fund a new clinical chair position at Kingston Health Sciences Center. After raising $3.5 million over its 27-year history in support of women's health at KHSC, this year's tournament set its sights on a new, ambitious goal: establishing the Rose of Hope Clinical Chair in Breast Health at Kingston Health Sciences Center. KHSC has announced that Dr. Doris Jabs will be taking on this new leadership role. A women's imaging radiologist with more than two decades of experience, Dr. Jabs is also the longtime regional breast imaging lead for the Ontario Breast Screening Program and one of the driving forces behind the creation of KHSC's Breast Imaging Kingston, BIC, a state-of-the-art breast cancer screening and diagnostic facility. Dr. Jabs sat down with CFRC to share what this appointment means for her and the future of breast health in Kingston.
So the Rose of Hope Clinical Chair in Breast Health is truly, it's an inaugural position, and it really is an honor for me to be in this role. I've been in Kingston as a breast radiologist for, I don't want to give away my age, but I'm moving on to my end of my second decade. And breast imaging truly is a passion for me. I enjoy every day going to work. I enjoy my work. I enjoy the people I work with, and I enjoy the people that I am providing a service to. This position is very special. So this position moves us from the excellent technology that we have, the amazing facility at Breast Imaging Kingston, which if you haven't been to, you really should at least zip by to see how special it is, to a more transformative position, which is now going to bring all that technology together with the expertise that we have in the city, which is excellent across multiple disciplines. So we have expertise in primary care, family physicians, in imaging, breast radiology, oncology, surgery, pathology. And this position now is going to marry all that together, or attempt to marry all that together, and find gaps that we can close in innovative ways, thinking out of the box, in a real patient-centered or client-centered approach. So this is going to be all about the women, the people that we serve. It's going to be about making their journey quicker, simpler, hopefully less anxiety-laden together.
According to KHSC, unlike funding for a single piece of equipment, a clinical chair position provides the time and resources for a physician to drive innovation in care, research, and education. Dr. Jabs explained the transformative power of a clinical chair role and some of her goals walking into the position.
So a clinical chair, I believe the other position that we have is in genomics. The clinical chair is very different. So the way the system currently works is we have all these specialties that do have heads of department and heads of sections, and they're all excellent in and of their own right. The surgeons are excellent. The pathologists are excellent. The radiologists, the primary care, they're all very good, but it's not, it's a bit siloed. from a patient perspective, in any case, I think it's a bit siloed. And so although everybody is doing excellent work in their area, you need somebody or something or a role to be able to tie that all together, right, for the people that experience the care. So we as care providers are excellent care providers in our area, but the people that we care for actually move within all those different areas. And so it's to bring all of that together. And that is a very unique role that we currently have at KGH. It is very forward thinking. I'm very excited to be in this position.
And what kinds of innovation are you looking to explore? What are you excited about?
I can't give away all of my secrets, of course, right? it's going to be iterative. So I certainly have some ideas already that we're rolling out that we're going to try and bring sort of some that we can do very quickly, others that will take a little bit longer. I think one of the most important things is I'm really keen on getting a rapid access type service going at the BIC. So this can be done in many different ways, but basically it's a way to have women be seen quicker in a seamless way. We definitely are going to be updating ourselves and bringing in all the new technologies that we have. We have AI platforms, we have digital technologies, we have social media, we have all these innovative technological tools available that I think have been perhaps maybe a little bit underused. So I'm certainly going to try and bring some of those in. We have to reach out to our underserved communities. That is a definite gap that we need to address. And so those are sort of some of our initial initiatives.
Yeah. And I mean, you kind of dove into this right there, but I was wondering if you could speak to some of the challenges that we're facing in breast health and those first things that you're really wanting to address when you walk into this position.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is just my personal experience and what I've gleaned over my years of working in the field. I think some of the barriers that we have in breast health is there's some fear around it. Certainly, there are some groups that are very keen on getting screened and keen on their breast health. There are others that don't know. So education is a huge gap that we need to fill. People may just not know about what they need to do for their breast health. And then there are others, I think, that are anxious and have fears which may have a foundation, fears which may not be grounded. And so I think those are all barriers to getting screened, to being an advocate for your breast health, to getting things done. And so we need to really increase our screen participation rate in the region. That's the key thing in breast health, right? It's all about breast screening. It's all about detection. And the OBSP, the Ontario Breast Screening Program, which is our provincial breast screening program, has recently dropped the age of screen. So historically, women from the age of 50 to 72 were invited to the breast screening program, and we've now dropped that to 40. So I think there's a huge group of people out there that we could now access that may or may not even know that this is what's available for them. So it's sort of trying to take away the fear a little bit, to decrease the anxiety through education and absolutely through accessibility.
This year's Rose of Hope tournament raised $285,000, the first installment of their five-year pledge.
The Rose of Hope is very special. They are a very energizing and inspiring group of women. Although I've been aware of the Rose of Hope and we've had them support multiple technologies at the BIC, our MRI is coming online early 2026. They were fundamental in other technologies at the BIC to include our prone biopsy table and prone biopsy device. So they're not new to me. I'm not new to them. But the Rose of Hope tournament this year, which was all about this clinical chair position and their fundraising for that, was truly humbling, inspiring, energizing all at the same time. These women are a very dedicated group of women to truly improve the care that the women in our region are receiving. It's fantastic.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, with a story about a program in Kingston schools designed to prevent gender-based violence.
Thank you, Jesse. A new partnership between the John Howard Society of Kingston and District and the Sexual Assault Center Kingston has culminated in the launch of Rewire, Empowering Youth for Healthy Relationships, a new early intervention program aimed at preventing gender-based violence. Funded by the Ministry of Children, Community and Social Services as part of Ontario's action plan to end gender-based violence, this innovative group-based initiative will be delivered to students and staff across local school boards, including the Limestone District School Board and the Algonquin and Lakeshore Catholic District School Board. According to a press release from the John Howard Society and SAC Kingston, Rewire is designed to engage youth in meaningful conversations about healthy relationships, emotional intelligence, and responsible behavior both online and offline. The program supports area staff and students in engaging in meaningful conversations about healthy relationships. According to research by Dr. Wendy Craig of Queen's University, many educators feel underprepared in this area. By leveraging community-based expertise and emerging trends in GBV prevention, Rewire offers a proactive, evidence-informed approach to fostering safer, more respectful relationships, according to program organizers. For those coordinating the program, having two local agencies with established visibility and experience team up to offer Rewire is pivotal in addressing GBV. Julia Langan, Executive Director of the John Howard Society of Kingston and District, stated that Rewire will create a space where young people can learn, grow, and challenge harmful norms in a supportive environment. Ultimately, the program's goal is to break the cycle of GBV and prevent future justice involvement. For more information about the Rewire program or to inquire about participation, contact Julia Langan at julie.langan@jhskd.ca. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a story from the LJR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the growing rift between Mayor John Beddoes and the Gananoque Town Council.
Thank you, Dinah. A dispute over the cost of a judicial review currently underway has spilled into the public arena, with Gananoque Mayor John Beddoes and members of Town Council engaging in a pointed exchange on social media. The judicial review stems from a May decision by Beddoes to challenge Council's suspension of his pay and requirement for a formal apology. The disciplinary action followed a report by Gananoque's Integrity Commissioner, which concluded that Beddoes had committed 8 breaches of the Municipal Code of Conduct. In June, Council directed staff to retain legal counsel in response to the Mayor's judicial review application, setting the stage for the ongoing debate over who bears the cost of legal process. Beddoes reignited the discussion on August 24th, posting publicly on Facebook, quote, "I am upfronting all of my own costs. The cost to the town, if any, of the judicial review process is at the discretion of the rest of the council," unquote. The post drew immediate responses from council members. Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey questioned Beddoes' assertion of council discretion, noting that council followed due process under the Municipal Act by referring concerns to the Independent Integrity Commissioner. Quote, "Thank you for covering your own costs, but you are aware in these circumstances there may be time where the town needs legal protection for their own defense," Leakey wrote. Beddoes responded by pointing to the public minutes of a June 25th closed session of council, where he attended briefly to ensure quorum before recusing himself due to pecuniary interest. Councillor David Osman later joined the online discussion, challenging Beddoes' framing of events. Osman argued that Beddoes' actions in initiating legal action directly limited council's ability to support staff during the review. He also pushed back on the mayor's claim that the cost to taxpayers depended on council discretion. The online exchange highlights growing tension between Beddoes and his council colleagues, as well as ongoing public scrutiny of the judicial review process. Town staff members have not yet commented on the matter.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the possibility of legal action against Greater Napanee from Lennox and Addington related to a homeless encampment protocol map.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Greater Napanee is potentially facing legal action from its own county. The town received correspondence from a law firm representing Lennox and Addington demanding that Greater Napanee stop distributing an encampment protocol map that identifies county lands as public property. The county has given the town 7 days as of August 25th before legal action will be taken. Following negative interactions between housed and unhoused individuals, the town looked into several legal opinions on an encampment protocol designed to provide a greater level of predictability in the community. Staff developed the encampment protocol map, and it has since been used regularly. Staff noted that in the absence of any formal guidance from housing authorities on how to deal with the increasing level of encampments, they would be reluctant to remove this form of guidance. CAO with the town of Greater Napanee, Matthew Grant, explains the legal action and what started it off for the county.
The legal action is about the town's use of the map, which identifies those public spaces. And the issue of litigation arose after a tent appeared on county property at 97 Thomas Street. The argument is that by identifying public lands on a map that case law has deemed accessible to homeless individuals, we are encouraging people to go there.
Grant explained what happened on the day of the complaint.
We hadn't received any complaints about the map until August 13th of this year. That was the same day a homeless individual set up a tent on county lands at 97 Thomas Street. Bylaw was notified of this issue by a community partner in writing. Bylaw was later called to that site after an employee at the county of Lennox and Addington reportedly told the homeless individual and some outreach workers that they had to leave the property or law enforcement would be contacted. On late, you know, in the day on August 13th, I was contacted by the chief administrative officer of the county of Lennox and Addington, telling me they had concerns about the individual on their property. And they were also concerned that bylaw services at the town of Greater Napanee was directing people to that property. I know that is not true, and I did convey that, and I have seen the documentation that proves that.
Staff's report noted that in 2024, Greater Napanee experienced a surge in encampments, with the majority located on property owned by the town. Case law in other municipalities around the province has established that unhoused individuals have a constitutional right to shelter themselves on public property if there is an insufficient supply of shelter and public housing in the community. Grant speaks about the current housing situations in Napanee.
In Greater Napanee, affordable housing and homelessness programming is the responsibility of the County of Lennox and Addington and Prince Edward and Lennox and Addington Social Services. Case law, provincially and federally, has deemed that people have the constitutional right to shelter themselves on public property if there is not enough shelter or affordable housing within a community. That case law has been tried and tested in Waterloo, in Kingston, and in Hamilton, and is applicable to all public lands. And in the town of Greater Napanee, we do not have any shelters, and we do not have enough affordable housing.
Grant spoke about the reasoning behind creating the encampment protocol map.
I will take us back to 2024, when the town was experiencing a very difficult time where there was conflict and even violence with the situation around encampments. And candidly, my perspective is that's because the situation was unpredictable. In 2024, in a bid to make things more predictable, to allow people to have access to their parks, as well as providing spaces, in awareness where individuals could exercise their constitutional rights and minimize negative interaction that we experienced in 2024. We developed a parks bylaw and an encampment protocol.
Bylaw officer with the town of Greater Napanee, Arthur Cook, explained how they use the map in the town.
The map is one of our main communication tools when we are interacting with both the public and members of our in-house community in Greater Napanee. It's a main tool that we include in educational handouts. It exists on the backs of orders that we issue, and we have circulated it to the partner agencies that are also working on this issue alongside the town. It is a tool that is easy to understand, that allows us to be able to show people where in a space and time they actually are. For example, if we were interacting with an individual, the public in Conservation Park, we're actually able to show on the map where we are for that interaction. It's a relatively clear, simple, straightforward way that anybody with any level or degree of education or understanding of Napanee can understand.
Cook went on to explain the map doesn't direct people to certain areas, nor do members of staff.
We use the map as a tool to show what areas are sensitive use areas. So per the bylaw, the red spaces on the map where individuals cannot encamp. And we do not direct anybody to any one particular specific location.
Grant spoke about the feedback they received while creating the map.
We included public property on that particular communications instrument. And we did a series of consultation with stakeholders. In terms of feedback we received specifically from partners at the County of Lenexing, Addington, and Pelas, the feedback we received from a member of their management team was to remove their phone number from the map that we were using. The rest of the phone numbers from different partner organizations, including our own, remains.
Grant went on to detail the timeline of communications they received from the county.
On the 15th of August, it was indicated to me that the county was engaging legal counsel. Later that day, I received correspondence from a solicitor representing the County of Lenexing-Addington asking us to stop distributing the map while they conducted a legal review. On August 25th, our solicitors received a cease and desist order demanding that we no longer distribute the encampment protocol map or and stop doing that within 7 calendar days or face litigation. We have been asked to cease and desist using that map. We've also been asked to remove certain lands from that map.
Grant spoke about the usefulness of the map for town staff.
It's important to note, I think, that the map in and of itself, there's nothing illegal about it. It is a lawful document and a useful document, I would suggest. We did go above and beyond to consult the public and our stakeholders on the issue, including the map. We did reach out to all stakeholders, including leadership of the county and Pelas, on the map specifically a year ago. We created the protocol to deal with encampments and to bring predictability in the absence of a clear and coherent strategy around this issue by housing authorities, and it's working. You know, nobody wants this, but I would suggest we're able to manage this better than in 2024, and we're learning.
In response to the legal action, staff will be sending formal correspondence to the county, encouraging them to create their own bylaw governing encampments on their property. They will also be asking the county to develop, publicly consult on, and deploy a strategy for how encampments can be managed. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland's use of the controversial strong mayor powers.
I've heard enough of the discussion to feel that anything I might have to say is rather futile.
That was Coburg resident Jennifer Darrell reacting to information that she nor council had many options in opposing a strong mayor powers decision by Coburg Mayor Lucas Cleveland to completely restructure the town's planning and development department and appoint a person who has no education in planning to lead that department. Chris Challenger, who was the office manager to Chief Administrative Officer Tracy Vaughn, was appointed August 15th with a probation period of 6 to 12 months. In defending his decision, Cleveland said that he consulted internally with bureaucrats and other high-level officials in the town hall before making the decision, adding that speeding up development is paramount for Coburg. Yet he admitted he wanted to bypass council.
I'm not worried about the professionals in our field, nor am I worried about their skills or their abilities. What I've done is I've basically, with the mayor direct, I've done what wasn't possible previously without a full council buy-in. An organization like this would require the entire majority of council to agree that this change is worth trying.
For approximately 45 minutes Monday night, several councillors expressed frustration with Cleveland's decision, not only questioning the best hiring practices, but the financial impacts to the town for essentially creating a new development department and staffing it. Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie was concerned that a staff report on the cost was not presented to council. Cleveland said a financial study has not been conducted, but one will be done shortly as the department develops with the hiring of a deputy director. Councillor Adam Burkatt speculated Cleveland's decision will be harmful.
I think this particular directive is quite honestly more harmful than moving the department forward. I'll be honest. And I would have no issue if it was a matter of you appointing somebody that you know, if they had credentials and they're a planner as an interim, or even appointing somebody from the internally in the department as an interim until we went through the proper scheduling or hiring of a planner.
Cobourg and 169 other Ontario municipalities were granted additional powers by the provincial government May 1st. This includes appointing department heads, police and fire chiefs, and making decisions outside of council approval, which have been deemed provincial priorities. Town of Cobourg solicitor John Mascarin said there is not much council can do when strong mayor powers are invoked other than monitor the financial impacts to the town. Anthony Dew of Stalwood Homes, who is also a member of the Northumberland Contracting and Builders Association, agreed with Cleveland that speed is essential to development and that integrating these departments prevents working in silos. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, September 4th, the first non-sunny day in the forecast. Daytime high of 21 degrees with a 64% chance of precipitation. A lot of wind and a lot of rain predicted for Thursday. Moving into Friday, we get the remnants of that Thursday rainy day with a daytime high of 18 degrees. A couple rain clouds here and there, but largely it's going to be a beautiful day here in the city of Kingston. Just in time for the Queens game against the Laurier Golden Hawks under the lights at Richardson Stadium. Moving into the first weekend of September, Saturday, September 6th, daytime high of 17 with about a 50% chance of rain, and Sunday, September 7th, 17 degrees as well, but with lots of bright sunshine, and then moving into the start of next week, Monday, September 8th, 17 degrees and sunny.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. CFRC 101.9 FM is pleased to present an Airwave YGK matinee featuring live performances by Birdbone Theater, Foster Shea and Sudak, and the Oscar Evans Group. Come for an eclectic musical adventure featuring traditional Slavic sounds, folk pop, and jazz ensemble works created by local artists right here in Kingston. Join us at the Broom Factory September 28th from 1:30 to 4 p.m. for three great back-to-back performances by these wonderful local artists. Folks can come enjoy food and drink for sale in the Broom Factory's licensed cafe. Tickets are available now for $15 in advance via CFRC.ca or $20 at the door. The CFRC concert is made possible through the support of the City of Kingston, Kingston Arts Council, the Kingston Music Office, the Broom Factory, and our friends at Kingston Soundworks. Join CFRC on September 28th at the Broom Factory at 9:30 a.m. for our Airwave YGK Sound Tech Workshop. Rob Bailey of Kingston Soundworks will facilitate this hands-on workshop for young emerging musicians just starting out playing gigs. Come learn soundboard tech, terminology, troubleshooting, communications, equipment setup, and sound check basics with this local industry pro. Register now for the free workshop, make in-person connections with local musicians at a prestigious venue, and learn the ropes of sound mixing to help you get started with your live stage performances. The fun starts at 9:30 a.m. on September 28th at Broom Factory and includes a catered lunch from our friends at Old Farm Fine Foods. Register now via CFRC.ca. This CFRC Airwave YGK workshop is made possible through the support of the City of Kingston, Kingston Arts Council, the Kingston Music Office, the Broom Factory, and our friends at Kingston Soundworks.
On Friday, September 5th, we have a prime time clash under the lights at Richardson Stadium. The Gales and the Laurier Golden Hawks meet for the first time since the 2024 OUA semifinals. Can the Gales score a measure of revenge against the defending champs?
Touchdown, Queen!
Or will the Golden Hawks soar to their fourth straight victory over the Gales?
No! No! You are kidding me!
Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM on Friday, September 5th at 6:15 p.m. for the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 6:30 p.m. kickoff.
CFRC from Kingston, Ontario. Your volunteer program, campus and community radio at 101.9 FM and on the web at cfrc.ca.
Hello and welcome to another season of Plugged in My Ears podcast. I'm Adam, meeting with Sam and Kyle, and this is kind of different. We're doing a remote version of Plugged in My Ears this year. So Sam is currently in La Belle Province in Montreal. He's doing his law degree out there. And Kyle, where are you joining us from today? Because I know you might be all over the place.
I'm in Ottawa right now.
Okay. All right. So in Ottawa, close to the La Belle Province, but not quite. And we have a special guest with us today. Zayden Vergara is joining us because I needed help with setting up the equipment. So here we go. Season 3, episode 1. This is going to be, I think, the best season ever, mainly because I don't have to deal with Sam and Kyle's smell in the studio. So we want to talk... What were you
saying?
That's
what was making Adam not so talkative last season, eh?
Yeah. You know, I had my what are they called? Clothespins over my nose, and it was hard to talk. So, but we'll hop right into it. Speaking of great smelling athletes, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift just got engaged. Sam, I know you've been dying to tell us about this engagement and give us your opinion on it. You're a huge Swiftie. I'm pretty sure, didn't you say you met Travis Kelce last year or something like that? I don't remember.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for the most candid introduction to my stench. I'd like to say that, granted, I did take showers. Perhaps I may have smelled, but none smell worse than Kyle. So let's get that out of the way. Secondly, Zayden is not just a special guest, folks. He is special, and we love him. Very nice guy. Very, very generous and very humble. Now, on to the bigger and more important topics. What do I think about this? No, look, okay, guys, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan in general. All right, she kind of cries a lot about nothing, and she's a big polluter, and I don't really stand for that. But in general, it is kind of exciting that two worlds are colliding. The NFL merging with the music industry is perhaps one of the most significant events in our time in the realm of sport and music. And I think that can't be understated enough. I mean, Adam, you seem like you have a lot that you want to say, although Kyle is bursting to explode with an answer here.
Sam, I just got to confirm something here. So is it true that you put $2,000 on Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift kissing in the first 2 minutes of their podcast?
Actually, it was closer to the tune of $7,000. Granted, I had a bit of insight because I texted Travis's mom and she kind of let me know.
This guy cashed in for his tuition. Well, anyways, let's move on to some hockey news. McDavid's having some trouble choosing a contract for this
coming
year.
We know where he's going.
I know where he's going, but the question is for how long? Definitely some questions there. I think it's going to be a short-term contract. I don't think he signs for 8 years.
Well Zayden thinks he's going to Toronto.
He's coming home. I'm telling you right now, he's coming home. Marner's gone.
This podcast calls Toronto home, Zayden. Unfortunately,
I think he's going where. I mean, I'll ask you a question, Zayden. How do you feel about this year's lineup on the Maple Leafs? I don't know how I'm feeling about it, but
we're waiting for McDavid to come next year.
McDavid's going to save
only,
his entire
you
roster.
Only fill a partial hole that Marner left, eh?
You know what? There's not too much of a hole. It's okay. They'll survive.
They actually, survive. It's a pretty big hole. Look how poo Toronto looks now.
Yeah.
They have a guy from Arizona / Mexico who doesn't play for anyone but himself, and he wears a C on his jersey that was stripped from one of the greatest captains in modern history, John Tavares, which, by the way, is grossly insulting and rather indicative of what Toronto's establishment, the people, and even the city, if I may say, stand for. Secondly, I actually don't think that if McDavid went to Toronto, it would be any good. The problem before is that they had too much talent, and now you want to add more talent to the mix. To me, that seems kind of flawed from a team chemistry perspective. Like, say McDavid actually does go there. Let's take this at face value and take it seriously. How does that help them? They have too many good players at the present moment anyways. They don't even know who to structure their systems around. And I don't even think we can say they structured them around Matthews because half the time he's kind of irrelevant. So they don't even know what's going on. If they want to get McDavid there, they got to get rid of a few people, one of which is Nylander, another of which is Matthews. The only person on the team who's skilled and compatible enough to play with McDavid is maybe Tavares. But let's not forget that this guy's basically got early onset dementia at this point.
Oh, my God. Whoa. Oh, it sounds like you're still reeling from a playoff loss to the Leafs. That's okay. You'll get us eventually, at least once.
Strip it down and tear it down, eh, Sam?
Okay, but I'm serious, though. Do you guys not think that McDavid going there would actually not help Toronto at all? There'd just be too much talent. Like, they didn't know where to go before when they had that much talent.
I think it's not a matter of talent. I think it's the win-now mindset. I think, yes, I agree. Matthews probably doesn't. There's other people there that deserve the C more than Matthews does. Yeah, he can be talented, but I haven't seen he's a silent leader, and I don't think that's what Toronto needs in such a potent market. I think what you see from McDavid, yes, he might be silent at times, but he will rip you to bits. So if you go and get him in there, give him the C, you're really shaking things up. So yeah, you're building around him. Everyone else is going to have to try to play. I think you have the chemistry there that you would need, but yeah, the tough part is I think McDavid and Marner are probably a better combo than McDavid and Matthews.
Yeah. I think so a lot. I mean, regardless of where McDavid goes, I think a lot of it hinges on what happens this year, essentially. And the question is, do we think that the Oilers will go as far as they did last year and be successful this time?
No.
And I'm not sure either. Right. So I think that's the main question there. And you know what? Funnily enough, I was talking about Leafs and Senators. I mean, the Senators look, I guess, they look a bit better this year. The rankings, they're getting ranked. I mean, there's some openings to be filled in the power rankings. You know, the Senators could move up. I think I'm pretty hopeful in the Montreal Canadiens. I know Adam's got a lot of hopes there. I think, you know, Demidov, I thought he looked really good when he started playing, but I don't know if he can keep that kind of momentum going, but even if he kept half of that, he'd be pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm confident that almost every Canadian team is going to do well this year, maybe excluding the Calgary Flames. But I mean, I was actually listening to last year's episode where we talked about if the Oilers would go back to the Stanley Cup final. And I remember I said no, because I was like, no way, this team's too weak. So I had to admit I was very wrong about that. And this year I'm not going to be wrong. So I do think that they will go back. I think they are the best team in the Western Conference. They were really only, I think, seriously challenged by the LA Kings in the first round of the playoffs, of course, minus the Florida Panthers. But in the West, I think that Edmonton's got it. Maybe with the addition of Marner, I think Vegas is going to be really close. And I think that that's probably the most realistic contender for Edmonton in the West. But I mean, Connor McDavid in a contract year, I mean, this could be a really big season from him, like, if not his best, right? Especially if he's trying to make a point and get as much money as he wants going into the next season, or if he's really trying to prove that he is worthy of any team's whatever $15 million per year that he'll probably be getting. But yeah, I think that it's going to be a great season. And I'm excited in the East, too, because I think Montreal and Ottawa are going to be challenging Toronto for a playoff spot. I think Toronto is going to be more of a fringe playoff team than we think. I think they are.
I agree.
They're weaker than they were last year. I think Florida's going to be good. So I can't see Toronto winning the division. I think Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa could be like 3-4-5 or 2-3-4 in the Atlantic. I think Montreal will honestly be the lowest of those three. because I do think that they are very young, still inexperienced, but I do think Ottawa took great strides. They're also bringing back a lot of the same pieces that worked really well last year. So I think another year of just like team cohesion is going to work wonders for the Senators.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, my biggest issue with the Senators has always been their special teams. Like, oh man, like every year, like you look at the rankings of special teams, and even like Montreal, like for example, who historically, like in the last couple of years, hasn't done that great, that they have a better power play than the Sens. And you're just like, okay, well, if you have a power play this bad every year, like you literally are just going nowhere. Same with penalty kill, but you can't have bad both.
No, I know what you mean. I think Montreal, their stats are a little skewed because they have Patrick Laine on the right side all the time. So I think that's a little skewed. He scored a ton of power play goals last year. But I do think that this is going to be a great year for all of them. Any dark horse contenders, teams that maybe didn't make the playoffs last year, bottom feeders? I'm thinking like a team like Chicago or San Jose. Like, who do you think out of those bottom teams has the best chance of making the playoffs this year and taking that stride, almost being the Montreal of last year?
I'm gonna say San Jose, not because I actually think it's super likely, but no, I don't know. Like, I know this is a stupid thing to say, but I just kind of like Celebrini. And do you guys remember Crosby's second season, sophomore season, when he put up 120 points? And the next most points someone else got was close to like maybe 80 or something. And he basically propelled Pittsburgh into a playoff position. They shouldn't have been there, but they were because of him. I don't know. I'm putting my money on Celebrini to somehow find a way to do that. It's highly unlikely, and I'm aware of it, but I just don't see any other really, really bad team doing as well as that. Well, Chicago potentially, but I just don't think it's as likely for whatever reason. I know it doesn't make sense numerically, but just on a fundamental emotional level, this is what I believe.
Well, what about the retirement home, Nashville?
That's a good team.
They're not good.
Yeah, I forgot about those guys.
Yeah, they've faded into irrelevance, but there's some great talent there if they were to come alive and stop acting like they live in Nashville, but
yeah, no, that's a good point.
I don't think they're going to do that well, but I'd have a hard time believing that they would do as bad as they did this past year, but I don't think it'll be a major improvement if I was being honest.
Yeah, they don't really have players that are like developing still, like too many. So I do think that like they have Marchessault and Stamkos, and those are two great veterans, but that clearly did not work out last year. So maybe we'll see a difference. Maybe they get a hot start this year. I remember they had a terrible start last year, and that's kind of what sunk their season. But yeah, no, Nashville's a team that I could see pushing. A team that like I am high on to make the playoffs this year. They weren't bottom feeders last year, but the New York Rangers, I think that they're going to be back in the playoffs. I think last year was kind of an off year for them. But I don't think that they really needed to make too many changes to be there. I think the kind of just like they didn't really get a great hand when it came to injuries. Obviously Panarin and Zibanejad kind of underperformed, but I do think that the Rangers could sneak in. I mean, when you have the best goalie in the world, I think that that's, you can never count the Rangers out.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. They had some really good players underperform. But I also, you know, in my head, New York had made the playoffs. I kind of forgot that they didn't really. But New York is a playoff team, and it's actually more surprising that they didn't make it last year than that they would come back this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, is there any team that made the playoffs last year that you don't think is going to make the playoffs this year, minus the Montreal Canadiens, because I don't need to hear any slander. But I know that they are a team that even the NHL power rankings have them ranked 18th. So like that's out of the playoffs. So when it comes to betting, Montreal isn't really a team that's expected to make the playoffs again this year. But is there kind of like a higher ranked team that you think maybe is having more of a drop off? I mean, we've already talked about Toronto. St. Louis was barely in, so I'm not really counting St. Louis too much. But
I wanted to be right for once, Adam.
Sam, what's that? What's that there? What'd you say? Washington?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah?
I don't know. I just I don't know how they were good last year in the first place. I just didn't think they were that good of a team, and they won games nonetheless. Yeah. I mean, I guess hard work beats talent, although they had talent and not a lot of hard work. So I don't even know what happened there. And, you know, it's just the thing is they kind of have an older roster. And maybe the older players helped in that they knew a lot and had a great deal of experience. But at a certain point, you have to expect that a team that's as old as them, which I think has the oldest average age in the NHL this year, will likely have a hard time lasting the duration of the season.
Interesting.
For me, it's the Hurricanes, man. I don't know what these guys are doing. They've had some monumental fumbles and just no results. No results in that team. And, like, seriously, though, like, they've literally, like, you know, sold the farm for the last 2 years and then just nothing. Like, just such a strange team. And I don't think they're getting better. I think, I mean, like I said, they moved big pieces, made big changes, and they don't have much else to kind of go from here. So I think they're in a – I don't see them getting better. I just see it kind of going downhill from here for them.
No, that's a fair assessment. Now, I might have mixed this all up in my head, but does Carolina currently have Logan Stankoven? Is he currently on Carolina? I think so, right?
I believe so,
They traded him for Rantanen, and he was on Dallas, and Rantanen's on Dallas now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like Logan Stankoven a lot. I think that he is the face, the future face of Carolina. I think right now it is still Sebastian Aho, but I do think that Stankoven has the potential to be a very, very good player in the NHL. He played great in the playoffs this past year, and I think he is one of the bright spots on Carolina. And one of the reasons I can't really count them out, just because I know that I think he's going to have a great development year, and I think that he's going to be one of their leaders. And I mean, Aho's great too. The only thing I can see, again, a little shaky, is their goaltending. But I mean, that seems like to be the case of a lot of teams this year. But yeah, no, I think those are some great predictions. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, one last prediction before we kind of move on to some other topics. But of all the players in the NHL, big names, who is going to get traded throughout the year? Because last year, I feel like Mikko Rantanen, big name trade, got traded twice. Now, I don't think that will happen again almost ever. But if there's one star-studded player that could get traded this year, who do you think it's going to be? Sam, I'll start with you.
One big superstar player to get traded this year. Honestly, I can't really think of one person in particular. Like, no one really jumps to mind. If I had to say, I don't even know if this guy's superstar anymore, but I could see Claude Giroux and Ottawa being kind of upset with the way things are going. If they continue to go as they did last season, where they're kind of a fringe playoff team. I mean, he's just a guy who's still really good, who's been around, and who's never really had too many chances at the Cup. And if I was him, I'd want to maximize the amount of chances I get. So I could see him requesting a trade. I don't even know if that would come to fruition, though.
Yeah.
But, and then there's a few other guys. I mean, like, I don't know. I could see, I mean, I actually can't really see Crosby ever leaving Pittsburgh. I was going to say Crosby if you want to do it at Montreal.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
But I just, he's so invested into the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I think the Pittsburgh Penguins and Sidney Crosby are now synonymous. So for that reason, I can't foresee him leaving.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, Kyle. Anyone on your end?
There's some, you know what? There's some big guys that are up on the table. Panarin, last year contract. So contract year for Panarin too. That's kind of an interesting one. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I feel like New York is going to try to give him a bunch, but he didn't have that good of a season last year. But that being said, no one did on that team. So yeah. I don't know. Can you hold him for it? I think he's still one of their best players, but yeah, some decisions to be made there. I mean, maybe they're going for some rebuild sort of deal and move him, but I don't know on that one. And then Rasmus Anderson as well, from Flames. I could see him getting traded. I think that one's pretty likely.
Yeah.
Flames want to shop around for some new pieces, but I think he's a really good player, so he'll get taken up. I think the Oilers are potentially looking at him, actually.
Yeah, copping over the other side of Alberta. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good signing.
Yeah, I could see it. Zayden, how about you?
But before I head out, I feel like instead of looking at players that could be going, that those are just puzzle pieces. I think like the key teams I see making a big trade. If we want to see Edmonton going for the playoffs again, one final push. If they find out that they're not getting McDavid, I see them making a big trade, not with McDavid involved, but to get them the pieces to go and make one big final push. Or if he goes to them and says, well, you know what, we either make it this year or I'm gone. That could be a big push from Edmonton. Mm-hmm. The other team that I see making some really big trades this year, exact same thing, was New York. I feel them hitting the trade market, playing around their pieces, and if they make the right moves, they're right back into that playoff contention where they should have been last year.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So that kind of wraps up our NHL talk. I kind of want to move over to the Olympic team. Now, Zayden is heading out. Thank you, everything, for everything, Zayden. It was a great first episode to have you here. You'll definitely be back. Maybe not next episode. I think we're going to try to have some more variety going on.
Yeah, get someone with more personality.
Yes. Exactly. That is what we need to do. But yeah, thanks for joining us, Zayden. Enjoy your tacos.
Perfect. I will. I'm looking forward to it. And call me when you have problems with your tech.
All right. Sounds good. I'll let you know. All right. Cheers, so boys. With moving on to the Olympic rosters. So Canada and the U.S. just announced their training camps for the Olympic rosters, and they were having like all of them together. Everyone was meeting up. Some names that I thought were interesting, being a Montreal fan, being left off, was Lane Hutson off of the American training camp roster. Now, this is like, for people that are unaware of what the training camps look like, it's usually around 45 to 50 players are picked. And I think that it was surprising to see the Calder Trophy winner not invited to even the training camp. Like, I can understand him not being on the roster, but not being invited to training camp, I found, was a little surprising. Now, a lot of people were saying it's because he refused to play in the World Championships, which is kind of a, I mean, I personally rarely watch the World Championships, but I guess U.S. hockey is taking that pretty seriously. If you refuse to play in the World Championships, you kind of get a little bit of an asterisk beside your name when it comes to picking the best players for the Olympic team. Either Sam, Kyle, opinions on that? Maybe less on the Lane Hutson specifically, but on the U.S. valuing World Championship participation when it comes to making major decisions roster-wise.
I think part of it has to do with the fact that Olympic hockey is actually very different than NHL hockey. Not to say like they can't figure it out, but at the same time, like, you get a young player that doesn't know IHF rules that well, or at least isn't used to them that much. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have some costly mistakes, like penalty wise, that happen really easily, even if the player's not trying to do them. But they'll call you really easily, especially as a defenseman, or I mean, even in general, if you're just forechecking too hard, like in IHF, like, you just gotta be careful. Like, you're gonna get called for holding or cross-checking really easily. So I think that might be part of it, but I couldn't really tell you.
Okay.
I don't know. There's a lot of hot air on this stuff. I mean, believe me, the United States wants to make a point that they're the best at everything they do, which would make sense if it really is true that they want to win double IHF hockey. But I think it's sort of a long-standing belief that's widely held amongst every national program that no one cares about who wins double IHF for actual competition. Now, World Juniors is a good indication of what's going on. Well, at least it used to be until the Canadian kids got too good and weren't allowed to play anymore because they're in the NHL. Now it's an okay indicator of how other countries fare up against Canada nationally. I mean, I'll be honest with you, though, Adam. I'm actually kind of shocked that Lane Hutson didn't get invited to training camp because, he was the Calder Cup champion. Who cares about that in the grand scheme of things? What's really shocking is that he was a top 10 defenseman in the league for points, and he did not get invited. That is the crazy part. Are you telling me really that the United States thinks they have six better defensemen than him at this point? I can think of one for sure who's better, Quinn Hughes. Not many others who are indistinguishably better. I think Lane Hutson's a pretty legit defenseman. I don't know why he's not there. It's kind of crazy to me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, their roster's pretty stacked. Like, but no, I mean, training camp's kind of surprising.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, if you want to leave him off the team, that's fine, because you can say he's inexperienced and he is like, I don't know, he is a unique defenseman in the way he plays. But I thought bigger ice. I mean, Lane Hutson with the puck he makes incredible amounts of space on NHL sized ice. I can't really imagine how much he would thrive on international sized ice. Like, obviously you're getting larger surfaces to play on. Imagine the space that he could make up there. But I mean, again, I don't blame them for not picking him for the actual team, but I was just surprised with training camp. But my next question is, do you think Canada should kind of maybe do a similar thing, or are they doing a similar thing? I know Logan Thompson was a huge player left off of the training camp. So again, another player not even invited to training camp. Only three goalies invited to Canada training camp, which was like the least that Canada's had for Olympic training camp like ever. I think last 2010 there was like seven goalies that were invited, and this year only three. So we kind of know who's making the team, but Logan Thompson is arguably a top one, top two Canadian goalie right now. Do you think that that's a kind of a similar move by the Canadian team, or do you think that's like other reasons?
There's something weird going on with him, because the same thing happened this past year with the, the big competition with US Canada. But I don't know. There's something like weird internal politics with Logan Thompson. I'm not sure I really understand it, because he seems to be consistently left out of competitions like this. I mean, I honestly don't know the answer to why, but on paper he looks good. Maybe you know, he's just way weaker than I seem to understand. I think the most interesting way to tell how good goalies are is, I don't know if you guys see this, but at the end of every season they do player polling on questions.
Okay.
Like NHL player polling.
Yeah.
And every year they do it on goalies, like who is the best goaltender. And the results are usually pretty surprising. Like they're not necessarily like the ones that had the highest save percentage. Like, so the numbers don't usually seem to line up with like what the players are saying.
Interesting.
Like Hellebuck consistently is not ranked. I don't even know. I think he's maybe in the top five, but he doesn't seem to usually get that high ranking. I mean, like, he's getting relatively high rankings, but compared to his stats would indicate him as like the absolute number one goaltender, he consistently isn't ranked like that by players. So I think there's definitely a difference between stats and what's actually happening.
Yeah, there probably is. And I kind of agree with that, too, though. I think goals against average is largely a reflection of your team's defensive play to some extent. But, you know, knowing who's a good goal and who's not, it's kind of difficult to say. I think, though, Team Canada is pretty conscious of its PR. And if Logan Thompson actually is a problem, then that's why he's not there. That's a really big assumption to make. I'm not saying that he is a problem, but if there is some political thing going on, believe me, it's related to PR and nothing else. I think at this point, Team Canada cares more about its PR than they do about winning hockey. I mean, there's something to be said for that, I guess, but not in the world of winners and losers. So Canada will ultimately suffer from not inviting him if it is true that there's political reasons for which he's not there. Granted, I don't know. I mean, Canada's just in a bad space, goaltending-wise. This is probably the worst goaltending we've ever had in the National Hockey League in a long time. I think it's just the worst goaltending we've ever had in the National Hockey League, period. I can't think of a time when there's less good goaltending than there is now. I can remember the days of some glorious goaltenders out there, but the thing is, just so many kids grow up wanting to be the next Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid, and they want to be a superstar. They don't want to be a goalie. Who wants to be a goalie? So it's our problem.
I have to say, I think a lot of it's equipment, because equipment just got so good so fast. Like, the new sticks are literally feather light, and the players literally snap like two sticks a game because they're so flexible that the stick, like, you can't even tell like where the puck's going because of how much like whip the stick has. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's played a part. I mean, you can look at the like average goals, like it just has gone up over the last like 10 years, like quite a bit. I mean, but the NHL wants that to happen. So by virtue of having more goals, like, you're just going to have less good goal contenders. Like, it's just kind of how it is.
Yeah. Sounds like a conspiracy through the NHL. I think the NHL is hiding a lot more than we think. And we're going to dive into those next week when we're back. A few things we'll also touch on are NFL opening week and the Blue Jays heading into the playoffs. But thanks for joining us for another episode of Plugged to My Ears. And thanks for listening.
My name is Corey, and I am one of the managing editors of Quilt, a literary publication for and by undergraduate students here at Queen's.
Right now, we are hiring for our 2025-2026 team, and I want to invite you to apply. We're looking for undergraduate students for our financial team, event planners, illustrators and layout designers, editorial board, copy editors, and outreach team. We are also seeking grad student advisors to work alongside the editorial board. To find more information and a link to apply, go to our Instagram at QUQuilt. My name is Corey, and I am one of the managing editors of Quilt, a literary publication for and by undergraduate students here at Queen's. Right now, we are hiring for our 2025-2026 team, and I want to invite you to apply. We're looking for undergraduate students for our financial team, event planners, illustrators, and layout designers.